Vectis Radio, FM 104.6, the heart of the island's community.
Anyway, we have some guests this afternoon. The third lot of guests
we have. Been a busy show.
We have Louise and Victoria from the Hampshire and Isle of Wight Ambulance Service.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Is the Isle of Wight Ambulance Service is part of the NHS Trust, isn't it? All one thing here.
So, yes, the Isle of Wight Ambulance Service is part of the Isle of Wight NHS Trust. Yes. We're all one team together on the island.
Okay. So, you've come to tell us about what goes on in the ambulance service and just keep us all better informed than we were before.
Yes, because we need to know.
Who's going to start? Is it going to be Louise or Victoria?
So I'm happy to start.
Okay, so you are?
So my name is Victoria White and I'm the head of the ambulance service on the Isle of Wight.
Okay, tipping hat as we say this. Okay, so the ambulance service on the Isle of Wight, self-contained unit. When I say ambulance, people get an immediate picture of a chequered vehicle with blues and twos whizzing along the forest road or towards Cowes or somewhere, but it's much more than that, isn't it?
It is, and we absolutely, so we have our frontline ambulance service, which you'll all see are ambulances out on the road with their blues and twos on, racing to an emergency and to treat patients in their home or at the roadside. We have a control room that's based on site at St Mary's Hospital, adjacent to the hospital. So we've got our control room, and our control room has two services that run out of there. For the ambulance service, we have the 111, the NHS 111 service, and we have our 999 service that runs out of the control room as well. Our control room has our call handlers that obviously take all of the calls, but we also have a clinical support desk, so we have qualified paramedics and nurses that work on that clinical support desk.
Right, so you can do a certain amount of triage on the phone, as it were. Is that well, getting the right
That's absolutely correct, and that's they support our paramedics on the roadside as well as supporting the call handlers within the control room. And then we have a third arm to the ambulance service, which is our non-emergency patient transport.
Yes.
So that's our plan. Those are the white vehicles.
Sort of minibus type vehicles, yes.
Yeah, and they're, you know, a hugely essential service. They do all the planned movements for outpatients, providing those that have medical need to come into hospital. Mm-hmm. And they also support those patients that need that have medical need to be discharged back home from hospital. And our final part, which Louise will talk a little bit more about, is our education and training and our first aid and our amazing volunteers that support the community.
Oh, okay,
first
volunteers too. We'll talk about that in a second. Now, you're going to ask something, Maggie?
I was, yes. So I'm going to ring 999, the ambulance, and there's a person in front of me who's collapsed. So the person on the other end of the phone at your establishment will obviously ask questions like, are they conscious, are they bleeding, blah, blah, blah. And once they've got the gist of what's happening, they can then advise you what to do whilst you're waiting for an ambulance?
Absolutely, yeah. And it's a national pathways triage system that we use on the Isle of Wight. Mm-hmm. Everybody uses a national triage system, but you're absolutely right. It will categorise based on the clinical information that you're able or non-clinical information that you're able to give to help that call handler ascertain what level of response that you require.
And that helps the person who's calling be a bit more less panicky and know what to do.
Yeah, because they'll stay and give you instruction whilst waiting for the ambulance.
Okay.
So when the ambulance arrives, they are staffed by paramedics.
Yes.
How do you become a paramedic? What do you need to do to be a paramedic? Is that something that Louise would prefer?
There's two ways to become a paramedic. You could go through what you might call the classic route, as it were, where you apply to go to university and you'll get a degree in paramedic science.
Oh, right. I didn't know such a thing existed.
Yeah, absolutely. And then the other way is a way that we introduced into the service fairly recently. and it's to do with paramedic apprenticeship. So if you were already, if you worked for the Isle of Wight Ambulance Service or any ambulance service that does apprenticeships, you would come in as an emergency care assistant. So those are the people that you see in the yellow trucks, as it were, with a paramedic perhaps. So you come in as an emergency care assistant, you work on the road for 2 years, you then do what's called a bridging course, and then you're eligible for a 2-year paramedic apprenticeship. And the benefits of that are that you're already exposed and committed, as it were, to that frontline service. And for us as an ambulance service, we found it very difficult recruiting paramedics. And for want of better words, we're kind of growing our own. We have a wonderful workforce with people that want to progress, and it's been an absolute pleasure to be able to give that back to them now, to say that we are, you know, the Trust is supporting paramedic apprenticeships. It was the first of its kind just over a year ago, and, well, a year and a half ago now, and hopefully we'll see the first of our paramedic apprenticeships become newly qualified paramedics in spring next year.
Wow. Excellent. So they're learning on the job.
Yes.
Mm. Absolutely.
So how old do you need to be to become a paramedic apprentice then?
Well, so apprentice, well, you, so to be, if you were to become an ECA, you have to be 18 and 18, 2 years at road experience. So in theory, you couldn't do it before you're 20.
So basically, you start at 18 on the road, but you get to learn a lot when you're out on the road, I imagine.
Oh, absolutely. And I think the other thing that we have is with our volunteer community first responders, often that will be a sort of a career pathway, as it were, into the ambulance service. So whilst it's a volunteer role, it's an unpaid role, people are getting an idea of what it's all about to be part of a frontline service.
Yes.
And so people will come into the volunteer first responder scheme because they want to be a paramedic, and it doesn't automatically mean you'll get the apprenticeship or get an emergency care assistant position, but as you apply for those positions, obviously it shows that this is something that you are able to commit to and want to commit to.
And all adds to your CV.
Absolutely.
The other advantage of the apprenticeship is you're being paid as you study, as you work. So, you know, for some people, going to university is absolutely what they want to do. They want the university experience, and they will come out with a degree, and that's what they want to do. But some people prefer to be in a role where you're working and studying at the same time, and it offers both.
Yes, absolutely.
So can they do a university degree after they've become a qualified paramedic, if they wanted to?
Oh, well, you wouldn't need to because you get the degree.
Yeah,
so
I understand
the apprenticeship
that.
Leads
yeah.
the degree.
Oh, right, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, but, sorry, that's me probably not
gotcha.
Making it.
So university isn't for everybody at the end of the day. I went to university, loved it, did electrical engineering, great. Not for everybody. A practical approach is probably a bit better for some people. So
it's led by the University of Cumbria, the apprenticeship. So it's you're still doing a degree,
right.
but as a working apprenticeship, and
gotcha.
You end up, obviously, then there's a role for you as a paramedic afterwards.
Right.
So as Victoria said, the benefits of being paid as you're learning, but it's still a university degree and it's still under the force of university.
So a way of starting is to become one of your volunteers, which you said were very valuable people.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, as I said, it doesn't automatically mean you're eligible, you know, as it were, to apply, but it certainly puts you in good stead. And I think the most important thing is that people gain that experience and that exposure to real life patients. Is one thing watching it on telly, it's another thing reading about it in a book or whatever, but actually to be exposed to real life sick patients, it's a make or break sometimes for people.
I suppose sometimes people think, actually, I don't want to do this, which is just as good
Absolutely.
As saying, yes, I do want to do it.
Yes.
How do people apply to be a volunteer then?
So volunteer first responders, we advertise on NHS Jobs. So although it's not a job, it's a role and it's a volunteer role, we advertise through the NHS Jobs system. And the reason we do that is the whole governance and the checks behind the scenes, as it were, so it keeps a nice consistent approach. We will engage with the public when we are going to advertise. We've recently doubled our numbers of volunteer first responders, so we're not recruiting.
So you've got two now.
So we're not recruiting at the moment. No, we've got 54.
Oh, that's good.
But we're not recruiting at this very moment in time, but we're always looking for new recruits. And then when we do advertise, we can reach out to those people and say, look out for that.
Well, if you do need to engage with the public, do ask us. We'll make sure people know.
Thank you very much.
You're dying to get in there about... you're going to talk about defibrillators as well, weren't you, at some point?
Oh, yes, please, if I may. Back in September last year, we incorporated the new system into our computer aided dispatch system called the Circuit, which is a national defibrillator database. It's supported by the British Heart Foundation, and what we had was all those defibrillators on the island that we knew about, they were on our computer automated dispatch system, and they all needed to transfer onto the new system, the circuit. And we engaged with the public about this, and we reached out directly to Guardians. However, I have got a small pocket of Guardians of defibrillators on the island who haven't yet registered their defibrillators.
Okay.
Right. So really important that everybody who has a defibrillator, if you haven't already, please go to the British Heart Foundation website, click on the circuit, and please register your DFib, because if we don't know it's out there, we can't deploy a rescuer to it.
Right.
And obviously the purpose of the DFib before the ambulance service arrives is hopefully to try and increase that patient's chance of survival. Yes. From a cardiac arrest.
Yes.
Thank you, Kelvin.
No problem at all. Now, I'm just thinking there seems to be quite a lot more to be said here. So I suggest we take a break.
Vectis Radio, FM 104.6. For the people, by the people.
We've still got Victoria Louise in from the Isle of Wight Ambulance Service. And Victoria, you were going to talk about cars. I know you said we're all talking about ambulances, but you have cars as well.
Yeah, we do. We have cars in the ambulance service. We call them rapid response vehicles.
Right.
And we have specialist paramedics that work on those vehicles. So we have specialist paramedics in urgent care. We have specialist paramedics in enhanced critical care skills, and that's something we've developed over the last year and enhanced people's skills. And we also have a rapid response vehicle that's often on in the evening, Wednesday to Sunday, which has a mental health practitioner and a paramedic working together.
Right.
And that's something we introduced last year with a view to support those patients that are in a mental health crisis.
Yes.
Because what we would do is probably send an ambulance, and those patients might end up going into ED, whereas actually by sending the mental health practitioner with the paramedic, we can make sure there's nothing physical that the paramedic needs to help with, but actually having the mental health practitioner there really helps the care at the right place at the right time. So that's been that's amazing.
So that's a better use of resources in a way, isn't it?
Yeah. Because, and our urgent care paramedics, I've got the family have agreed for me to share this, but if we talk about a patient who is in a care home, falls out of bed and has a kind of a 5-centimetre gash on their head,
nasty.
The care home will possibly, well, they would have considered a head injury, and they called a 909, called the ambulance. It's a head injury, it's a fall, it was unwitnessed. And that would result in us sending an ambulance, and the patient will go into the emergency department to be looked at there. And in this case, what we were able to do, we have specialist paramedic in our control room. They've got something called Good Sam, which is a device that they can contact the care home and do a video consultation, so they could see the laceration on the head. They could see it wasn't deep. They could see that it was superficial. And they then sent the paramedic on a car out to glue the laceration, kept the patient in the care home, no conveyance into the hospital,
sorted,
and actually all amazing, so much better for the patient.
Yeah.
Yes.
They got the treatment they needed.
Less stressful.
Much less stressful. And that's the kind of work within the ambulance service. We're not always trying to push out an ambulance. We want to make sure that the patient gets the right care at the right time.
That makes sense.
Dementia, isn't it? And particularly for dementia.
Yeah.
Yes, I mean, there's an increasing incidence of dementia patients, I'm sure, and mental health practitioner will have some training in that, I have no doubt.
Yeah, and it helps, you know, it's working together, so we're trying to work really closely. We're an integrated trust, we're the only integrated trust in the country, and the advantages of that are to work with your mental health colleagues, work with your community community colleagues, and we work very closely with the community nurses and their rapid response crisis team for those patients that have physical problems, in the same way that we're working with the mental health crisis response team.
I think it's been shown that people have come to see how well it works, haven't they? See how the integrated system works. I think it is a bit of a beacon, that, isn't it?
It is how
it all works together.
We are quite a unique community, aren't we?
We are.
On the island.
Yeah. So, now, Louise, you had something else to add, didn't you?
Well, it was just to ask, really, if there's anybody that requires first aid at work, qualifications for their workplace, just to make people aware, really, that the ambulance service, that's another arm as it were. We have a commercial arm. Our website, isleofwightambulance.co.uk, and we do accredited first aid training courses. The one thing that we feel very proud of is that the income that's generated from any of those courses goes back into the community. Yep. It will help to replenish consumables that are used during a cardiac arrest. So if you have a set of pads that have been used in cardiac arrest, we can go out and replace those. For our community first responders, it helps us to purchase new kit for them. So it was just to say that it's something that perhaps people don't, they see us as the ambulance service that will attend, but actually we're also the ambulance service that is there to teach.
That's right. And that's a first aid in the workplace could often save the need for an ambulance to be sent out at all.
Absolutely.
Well, if someone's properly trained, yes.
Yes.
Well, then, so what was the website again, please?
www.isleofwightambulance.co.uk. And Isle of Wight has
one word.
Full,
Isle of Wight, one word. Yeah, thank you. So, anything else you want to add?
Just looking at her list, hold on.
No, I'm thinking from my perspective, it's a huge thank you to our community and all of your listeners. You know, we really appreciate as an ambulance service the way in which you know, people use our service and you know look to some, you know, seek alternatives where it's appropriate. So it's just from us, it's a thank you.
And you wanted to thank the strollers as well, didn't you?
Oh, well, it's just very timely that the strollers have just donated their 10th public access defibrillator
to us.
Oh,
wow.
So after their very successful comeback panto after COVID.
Yes, and they brilliant
were,
it was
it
too.
It was, yes. We were able, we took receipt of that. And St Peter's Church at Shorewell was a lucky recipient.
Okay.
So, yeah, very, very grateful for, goodness me, to have one public access defibrillator donated is absolutely amazing, but to have 10,
yes.
it's quite humbling. So very grateful to the strollers.
Thank you.
But that's what they're all about, isn't it?
It is. Thank you for coming in.
No, thank you very much for having us.
Will you come back again? I've got a feeling there's loads more to be said.
I think the list will get longer.
Well, yeah, I think it will. Will you come back again in a month or two's time and give us a bit more of an update on what's going on?
Pleasure. Thank you.
Yeah.
Lovely.
Your support matters. We operate thanks to the support of local businesses. If you would like to advertise on Vectis Radio, FM 104.6, contact our team today. Marketing at vectisradio.fm.